Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I didn't know you were going to start there. I was in the middle of an email.
I mean, I was born ready, but then I got less ready, and then the music started. Hey, everyone, I'm Molly Wood.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
Oh, my goodness. All right, I got to tell you
cause and
up front, I'm a little raspy today and on the air today doing Marketplace. I'd use the cough button for like only the second time in my entire life in radio, which is...
Whoa.
It was wild. Yeah, it was crazy.
Oh,
I just
no.
got this thing sideways in my throat at the end. So anyway, so I'm here and, you know, I may or not, you know, come and go, whatever. Anyway, I'm Kai.
Cough
so what do you
up.
Want to know Wednesday? I know. So we're going to answer your questions. If you have questions that you want to send to us, that would be good. Make me smart at marketplace.org or call us and leave us a voicemail, 508-827-6278. 508-UB-SMART, S-M-A-R-T, is how we spell that, the usual way. So there you go.
Not the Homer Simpson way. S-M-R-T.
Yeah, that's right.
I am so smart. S-M-R-T. Our first question today is a voice message about kind of everyone's secret favorite topic, mm-hmm. the backlog at the ports.
Hey, guys. God, William so in Houston. I saw a commercial for the Port of Houston. They were throwing shade at the Port of L.A. and the delays there. And the claim was that these delays aren't being seen in the Port of Houston. Why isn't more traffic being diverted to other ports? Like the Port of Houston. So could you make me smart on that? Thank you very much. Bye.
Wow. Wow.
That's hilarious.
Port
They're running like snotty ads being like the Port of Houston is crushing it and California is
Although
so stupid.
Although I will tell you, the PR guy for the Port of Oakland has been all over me in my DMs saying, hey, let's get the Port of Oakland CEO on the phone. We can take care of all this. And here's the deal. So number one, the port complex at Long Beach in Los Angeles is ginormous, and for all that other ports want to say we can do it, you can't because Long Beach and Los Angeles have scale, number one. Number two, little thing called the Panama Canal. If you want to get to the East Coast from Asia, which is where all the stuff coming from coming into California comes, most of it anyway, you got to go through the Panama Canal. And that has like 10 days or 2 weeks, right? And even though there are some politicians out there, Greg Abbott from Texas is saying, oh, it's going to be fine, whatever. Not fine. Not fine. You're at the whims and vagaries of a bunch of other things, right? Also, Port of Houston has its own problems. The Wall Street Journal, thank you, either Marissa or Grace, for bringing this one to our attention. Journal has a story. See what I mean about the cough button? See,
yeah.
And that wasn't even like a beer thing. I know.
Is it allergies?
No, I don't know what it is. Anyway, companies in Houston are having their own problems, so that's kind of challenging. Here's one last thing about this, and there's inland infrastructure to contend with as well, right? For as messed up as it is, okay, that's not me, that's Willow. For as messed up as it is in the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles, there's inland infrastructure, right, which is truck depots and train stations and rails and all of those things that contribute to getting that cargo not just into California but farther inland, like to Chicago and stuff. So there's more to it than just the port complex. So interesting ads, not necessarily supported by reality. Boom.
Right. Clever. Funny. But yes, in all
Yo,
of last
super clever.
Year.
Yes.
Yeah, right? Like very clever, very funny. And let's just say that in all of last year, again, thank you, producers, Houston handled about 2.9 million containers, which is the equivalent of 2 months of traffic at LA Long Beach.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, traffic backs up because there's lots of cars, in this case, ships, and the containers right. are all there right. too. And I mean, it's a whole, yeah, it's,
right.
it's, look, it's a problem of scale. It's worse because it's bigger. It's funny though. It's
right.
funny that Houston's throwing shade. Yeah. I like it.
Good tip. All right. Question number two today. Here we go.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Akaki from DC area. As an immigrant, it is shocking to me how much energy is wasted in this country. Specifically, if you go to any downtown area in the U.S., during the night, all the lights are on in the skyscrapers. Can you make me smart? Why do we need these lights on in the office buildings throughout the night?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, true. In some skyscrapers, people do live there. So the lights are, you know, there's like a little bit of a mix of commercial and residential. But I think that probably the primary reason is that, like, there are regulations around it, like emergency exits that have to be lit. Some lights have to stay on because airplanes could run into the buildings if they're higher than 200 feet or 20 stories. They have to be lit or marked by light. That could just be lights on top, though, instead of every office building or every office having its lights on. It's kind of this, like, lights stay on for janitors and maintenance workers. You know, there are all of these perfectly reasonable sounding reasons why the lights might be on well into the night. But it is almost certainly true that they don't all have to be on. I mean, there are so many things that we waste. Like, drinking water comes out of our hoses and we put in our plants, right? There's like so much wastefulness.
Right.
If anything, it's great because it's somewhere to start. But at least on the plus side, I think a lot of those buildings have now gone to LED, so the lighting is a lot more efficient. Nevertheless, the New York skyline alone is evidently responsible for 1.7 billion pounds of planet-warming carbon dioxide a year.
Crazy.
A year.
Crazy.
Yeah. So it is a good observation. It's absolutely true. And even if some of the reasons are real, like, maybe we need to find a way around those because, that's a lot.
Crazy.
Buildings are...
Buildings, add up all the cities, right after
transportation. Yeah. I know. Add up all the cities where the lights are on all the time.
Whew. Sheesh. All right.
Yeah.
Here we go. Another one.
Hi, this is Vanessa from Brooklyn. I am wondering, how does a layperson who has or is lucky enough to have a 401k or some other investment vehicle start to divest themselves of holdings that are not beneficial to the environment and or humanity as a whole? How do we do this whole ESG thing?
Oh, Vanessa, how much time do you got? So look, ESG is environmental, sustainable, and good governance, right? It's basically, you know, putting your values into your investments. It's huge. The Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investing says assets under management using those investing strategies, $17 trillion last year. It's ginormous.
Wow.
But here's the thing. I did an interview about this on Marketplace with, what's her name from Box? Anyway, Emily Stewart. She was great. Also, we talked to the guy from Engine One, Michael O'Leary. They're the company that got the seats on the board of ExxonMobil about 6 or 8 months ago. The upshot is there are two main things here. Number one, stuff that says they are ESG compliant. There is no ESG compliant rule, right? It's whatever companies decide makes them look good, right? So they can add costs and maybe cut back on a little bit of fossil fuel investing, and they are more ESG compliant than the next person. So there's no standard. But the other part is, in all honesty, you kind of can't do this by yourself. You got to call your 401k person and literally go through it and then investigate each of the funds into which your retirement plan has put money. And it's hard and it's complicated. And look, if it's important to you, you can do it, but it takes a long time. It takes a long time. Long time.
And most 401k plans, I mean, your employer on some level or whatever financial institution your employer is working with chooses the funds. And so what you may find is that those options are not in your 401k, and that the only way for you to really do it is to, like, put it in a self-directed IRA or something like that, where you're doing your own investing,
sure,
because you just may not have that option, right, within a retirement plan. So it is a lot of work. It's probably not 401k work. However, the opportunity that you have as an employee of whatever company you're at is to say, I want our 401k plan to have, you know, divestiture options, basically, options that don't include fossil fuels. And then that provides, you know, what's great about individual action is that it can translate into a group effect. It can have broader impact. So if you or you and 10 of your friends at work push your organization to, you know, include a fund, an ESG fund, a verified in some way ESG fund in your 401k, and a lot of people choose it, you will have had some impact that way.
Right. Right.
So there's always something. There's always something. And the SEC evidently is working on some definitions, some slightly more, some actual definitions around what ESG means for investors, although that is as of July. I don't know where we've landed on that, so hopefully soon. Yep. Hopefully soon.
Yep, yep.
All right, we have one more question from Mac in Brooklyn who writes, I was scrolling through the Marketplace website for merch yesterday and stumbled upon the vintage Kai t-shirt of him driving a Jeep while in the Navy. Needless to say, I immediately impulse bought it and was late to a staff meeting as a result. Could I get the story behind the photo on the shirt? Fun fact, I also did not know that that was on the merch shop, and I also immediately bought it. Which is like a little stalker of me. Maybe.
So let's get the URL out there. It's marketplace.org/shop. And also, I love that our producers felt the need to put prep in the rundown for me to answer this question about a shirt that has a picture
about
of me
your
on
own
it.
Life.
Anyway, so here's the story behind that shirt. Hang on a minute. Let me get Bonsai in here. Hang on a minute. Hey, Bonsai, come here. Come here. I know. Come here. Come on. I know. Sorry, that was the cough button to get rid of the dog. Anyway, so the picture is one of my favorite of me ever. It was late 1989, early 1990. I was in the Navy living in Norfolk, Virginia, flying off the USS Theodore Roosevelt. And I had it's not a Jeep, it's a car. It's a 1972 Oldsmobile Cutlass 442 convertible, red with a white top. It got about 10 miles to the gallon, but it went 1,000 miles an hour in a straight line. And you couldn't corner in the freaking thing, but you could just go like a bat out of hell. And it was great. Top five list of regrets in my life, one of them is selling that car. But my brother was down visiting, and we went out for a drive somewhere, whatever, and the top was down and we were driving along, gorgeous day, and he took a picture, and it's me in my Navy uniform with my wings and my ribbons and my aviator sunglasses and the whole deal. And I just really like that picture. And for some reason, Marketplace decided to put it on a shirt. So there you go.
It's so good. It's such a good shirt. So awesome. Man. I told Kai he should buy like 100 of them and wear one every day.
I have been told by my children that I am not allowed to wear that shirt ever. So
that's not right.
I don't know.
That's just not right.
I don't know. Yeah.
I feel like whatever your children tell you, don't you have to do the opposite? Because then you get to embarrass them and it's all worthwhile.
Kind of.
Isn't that why we do this?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. That is it for us today. Thank you for all the wonderful, insightful, and interesting and also hilarious questions. We will be back tomorrow for Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. Keep sending your questions. Keep sending your Make Me Smile suggestions, whatever you like. We're at makemesmart@marketplace.org. You can leave us a voicemail at 508-827-6278, also known as 508-UB-SMART. Oh, the prep for your life story.
Today's
That's awesome.
Episode
you know your talent.
Of this podcast. Oh, man. Today's episode of this podcast, which is called Make Me Smart, was produced by Marissa Cabrera and engineered by Juan Carlos Torrado. Grace Rubin is our intern extraordinaire.
Ben Holliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music, and our senior producer who put the prep in is Bridget Bonner. It might not have been her, but it's
no,
kind of
No, I'm pretty
style.
Sure it was. Well, so here's here's what happened. She slacked me a couple of days ago and said, hey, we got this question. Can you answer it? And so I sent her the whole story, And I said, sure, happy to answer it. And then she basically put that in the prep. Love you, Bridget.
Love you.
Oh, my goodness.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.